Just fooling around, just remembering. Just remembering. I forget what these songs are. I've really got to learn them again.
Leonard Cohen has forgotten his old songs. He hasn't played them in 12 years. Now he's sitting at home in his little house and trying to play, because I would like it so much.
That's If It Be Your Will. I don't remember it. And I have to learn it.
There are no waves here. But if you wish, there are.
I've been blessed with amnesia. I hardly remember anything of the past, you know. I don't have any good memories or bad memories.
Leonard Cohen says he has been blessed with memory loss, that he doesn't remember anything.
You want some of this? Shall I cut you a piece?
Yes, please.
What do you feel like? A little bit of everything?
I wanted to ask questions and make him remember, but he had warned me in an email before my arrival. My memory isn't all that good.
My life has always felt the same. One day bleeds into another. It's been a lot of sunlight. And then just working, that seems to be the inner voice seems to be saying, make something.
Something beautiful or important or unimportant. Just make something. Don't know when this morning begins or when this evening will end. Just a few things stand out from the canvas. When your children were born, or the first time you entered the stage with your guitar.
From this broken hill, all your praises they shall ring. If it be your will to let me sing.
Yes, my daughter, what is it? How are you, sweetheart? Forget it, darling. Is Daniel here? He's at your store? Okay, sweetheart. Thanks a lot. Speak to you later. Bye. Those aren't my daughter's dogs. Those are the naughty neighbor's dogs.
Your dogs are the nice ones?
My dogs are the nice ones.
There is no beach, no moon above the ocean. Just a villa suburb of Los Angeles. Small gardens, playing dogs. A daughter in the basement apartment. And Leonard Cohen, 71 years old and tacit. Thin, a little shorter than me. In a grey suit and white shirt.
What were you like as a young man?
But what was he like before, as a young poet?
What was I like as a young man? I don't know. I had a calling. I wanted to be a writer. From very, very early time, I just knew I was going to be a writer. And it was a writer not in a popular culture. On the contrary, it was a writer whose allegiance was to writers that were already dead.
To write, always write, born with a golden tongue. Write for the old great poets. Be one of them.
I just wanted to be one of those guys that did that kind of thing. You know, and my feeling was if I did those things with the kind of integrity and the gift would be given me, that I wouldn't have to worry about my life. There would be money, there would be women. Not in any abundance, I mean, there'd be enough for me.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice. And 27 angels from the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
I've never had much to say, so I'll just keep working on something until something arises that is better than me, better than my thought.
Never had a choice, never made a real choice. Life just unfolded of its own accord.
I was born like this, I had no choice.
Always the same, write the page, finish a song.
There's nothing like ending something, you know, like a song or a book or a record, you know. There are periods when you don't believe you're ever going to finish it. Things are just not going well.
Do you have any plans of making a new record with your own voice on it?
Oh yes, I'm just starting it now. I have high hopes. I don't know. I need 10 songs, something like that. You know, I have to fill up 50 minutes. And you want it to be good. So I'm going to give it a try.
I wanted to take him back to an island in Greece. I had made a documentary about Cohen's all-time sweetheart, Marianne, his Norwegian muse. Heard that he met on the Greek island of Hydra and gave the song So Long, Marianne. I had brought along the program on a CD and an English transcript.
Would you like to listen to the beginning of the
documentary? Sure, let's hear it.
I wanted him to be able to hear the great love of his youth tell her story and get him to remember.
So that's the script.
Thank you. Quit loud.
Darling, I like to try to read your palm.
Very good.
Yeah.
Køya mi og skulle hente flaskevann og melk.
Marianne was standing in the shop with her basket, waiting to pick up bottled water and milk. And Leonard is standing in the doorway with the sun behind him. And then you don't see the face, you just see the contours. And so she hears his voice saying,
"Would you like to join us? We're sitting outside."
And when her eyes met his eyes, she felt it throughout her body. It's utterly incredible.
She's terrific. It is her way of telling a story, and it's just delightful. There wasn't a man who wasn't interested in Marianne. There was no one that wasn't interested in approaching that beauty and that generosity. She was a traditional Nordic beauty. That was indisputable, but she was also very kind. And she was one of the most modest people about her beauty. You know, looking at it from a distance of, 40, 45 years almost, I see how very rare those qualities are. And she just knew things about the moment, about graciousness, about service, about hospitality, about generosity. And she had that other side too, where she'd drink wine and dance and become wild and beautiful and threatening and dangerous, you know, if you were a man with her. You're hungry now, darling.
No, we've just been talking so much, so I've got to grab the opportunity to finish my cake.
Yeah, have a little.
Now, Marianne doesn't know, but this is her cook's group. I mean, we got this one together.
Where is it from?
I think it's, I don't know, but it looks Norwegian to me.
This isn't a very good wine, but it's okay.
There, you see, you have good memory. You can recall.
Yeah, I can come up with this stuff if you ask me specifically.
You've given many interviews during the years.
Not for a long time. I haven't given any interviews for a long time.
Says he doesn't remember anything, that the past doesn't interest him. But those memories that are worth anything, one stores, surely, to be able to bring them out and look at them once in a while. I was searching for the past. He believes in the power of the moment.
The cordiality of the moment is much more important than the content. But, you know, I accept that I can't really rise to the occasion. It's just the way it is. It's not exactly a lie, what one is saying. It's just not deep enough. You know, we're in this together. You know, I want to make it as good as we can. I just invite Daniel. Daniel, do you have any wood? Listen, this is Leonard, in case you didn't know. How are you, man? Good. If you'd like to come up for Shabbos dinner tonight, you're most welcome. There's a few people coming up.
Cohen invites guests for his regular Friday night dinner.
So come up around 6:30, and you can make yourself a drink. And
family, friends.
You know what to do.
Traditional Jewish food.
Okay, man. Later. I don't know what I could play for you. In my late 20s, or it must have been around 30, I had just come to the realization that I, you know, couldn't make a living. I had expected that money would come just ordinarily, not great amounts of it, but I thought if I wrote well and books were published, and they were, that there would be enough to finance the next book. I had, you know, always played songs. I'd always been interested in music and played music, never professionally. So I was beginning a musical career for which I thought I was totally unsuited. I didn't play guitar well. I didn't sing well. I thought my lyrics were okay, my tunes were good. I thought I had a voice, but I thought it was written. I thought it was a written voice. So I never thought of presenting that voice on a stage. I was testing out the possibility of being a singer. You can fit it in somewhere, right?
Tones from the latest record Leonard Cohen has produced emanate into his living room. Tones so fresh they haven't yet been released.
Will you tell me when you've had enough? Otherwise we'll just sit and listen to it.
Cohen's lyrics about life and love. Anjanette Thomas, soft voice.
Looking back to San Francisco, wearing my blue Chinese dress, a yellow jacket with padded shoulders, smoking Sobrani cigarettes.
How has love changed throughout the years?
Has love changed during his life?
I never thought I was very good at it. You know, I had a great appetite for the company of women and for the sexual expression of friendship. You know, I wasn't very good at the things a woman wanted. You know, I don't know if any men are. I mean, I wanted that immediate affirmation of the, what could I call it, just of the possibility of escaping from the sexual loneliness, the pure loneliness of living with an appetite that you couldn't ever satisfy. So that you know, drives everybody crazy. That drives all men crazy. So, of course, it drove me crazy too. So, you know, that's what I wanted. And so it seemed to be that's all that I wanted. Anything after that, I was ready to negotiate. And I was very fortunate because it was the 60s. And that possibility was very, very present. And for a tiny moment in social history, there was a tremendous cooperation between men and women about that particular item. And so I was very lucky that my appetite coincided with this very rare, what, religious, social, I don't know what you'd call it, some kind of phenomenon, you know, that allowed men and women, boys and girls we were, to come together in that kind of union that satisfied both the appetites.
For we are driving most carefully home, down roads that are floating and veiled. The Golden Gate, it's still gold, it's still great. Nobody's drunk, nothing has failed.
It's so, so soft and deep. You know, it's just live in it.
Mm. But your lyrics about love, they have changed from in the 60s till the 80s, till
tonight.
Today.
Yes, but I, as I say, I don't know what the changes are, and I don't know what they signify. I don't know what is happening. I'm trying to find out. I don't care what's happening, to tell you the truth. So something is happening, as Dylan said, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? So that's the way I feel. I'm not interested in the explanation, even my own. I know that the past produces the present and the present produces the future, but I have no interest in the past, and I have very little interest in the man I was then. It doesn't present a mystery to me. It doesn't present a puzzle to be solved. I just feel I embody it, you know. Do you want something to drink? Some wine, some aquavit, some...
We have a little tea.
Now we need a little tea.
I love you in the morning. Kisses deep and warm, your hair upon the pillow like a sleepy golden star.
Yes. Mariana and I were in a hotel in Piraeus.
Back in the 60s, Mariana and Leonard in a modest hotel in Piraeus.
And we were both, 25.
Now it's come to distances, and both of us must
try. We had to catch the boat back to Idra. We got up and we got a taxi. And I've never forgotten this. And nothing happened. We were just sitting in the back of the taxi with Mariana, lit a cigarette, you know, thinking, I'm an adult. I'm with this beautiful woman. We have a little money in our pocket. That feeling, I think I've tried to recreate it hundreds of times unsuccessfully. Just that feeling of being grown up with somebody beautiful that you're happy to be beside, you know, where all the world is in front of you, where your body is suntanned and you're going to get on a boat.
Vi satt i solen, vi lå i solen, vi gikk i solen, vi lyttet til musikk, vi badet.
They lay in the sun, they walked in the sun, they listened to music, they bathed, they played, they drank, they discussed. There was riding and lovemaking. During 5 years, Marianne didn't have shoes on her feet.
I 5 år hadde jeg ikke sko på beina, ikke sant?
When Leonard went back to Montreal, it didn't take long before Marianne received a telegram.
Have house. All I need is my woman and her son. Love, Leonard. Somebody.
I remember her arriving at the airport in her fur coat. She had two heavy valises in each hand. I was prevented from entering that area, but I could see her through the glass. And she couldn't wave to me because she couldn't lift the suitcases up, and she didn't want to drop them. She was moving, you know. So she waved to me with her foot. I remember that very, very clearly. Excuse me. Hi, sweetheart. What are you doing? Oh, listen, darling, I'm just in the middle of an interview. Yeah. I'll speak to you later on tonight. Okay, darling. Bye.
Did you feel that love was risky sometimes?
Risky.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, never mind. You know, it's fatal. It's a risky business. I had to go crazy to love you. I had to go down to the pit. I had to go crazy to love you. I had to let everything fall.
I had to go crazy to love you. Had to go down to the pit.
I had to be people I hated. I had to be no one at all. Tired of choosing desire. I've been saved by a blessed fatigue. The gates of commitment unwired, and nobody trying to leave.
Crazy to love you. You who were never the one whom I chased through the souvenir heartache. My braids and my blouse all undone.
That's the way I describe certain moments now in that process. Thanks for the dance. Thanks for all the dances. It's been hell, it's been swell, it's been fun. Thanks for the dance. Thanks for all the dances. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1.
Thanks for the dance. I'm sorry you're tired. The evening has hardly begun. Thanks for the dance. Try to look inspired. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1. There's a rose in my hair. My shoulders are bare. I've been wearing this costume forever.
This is brisket. A friend made for me.
There is a dinner smell in Leonard Cohen's old white-painted kitchen. He's preparing food for this evening's feast. Guests will arrive in a couple of hours.
Yeah, it's a kind of traditional.
Cohen's old friend Eric pops by and sniffs the pots.
Oh, hi. How are you feeling?
How are you doing, bro?
I
stuff like that. Now, how does this guy work?
That's Mariana's.
Oh, wow.
That's Mariana's.
And it makes cool opener. Cork things.
It's the best opener I ever.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful when the kids or my friends come on a Friday night, and I know what the form, you know, of the meal is going to be, and I know what the tone is going to be. And it's very, so for that reason, it's very relaxing.
Leonard Cohen thrives at home, likes that nothing much happens. He hasn't toured for 13 years. He was a wreck after the last round, with over 100 concerts.
Oh, we're drinking and we're dancing and the band is really happening and the Johnny Walker wisdom running high.
I was wrecked at the end of it because I started drinking an enormous amount of red wine just to get on stage. And it wasn't that I wanted to be drunk, it was this particular wine and the music went together perfectly. And, you know, after I had a bottle or two, I really wanted to sing. I started with a few glasses, and then it was a bottle, then it was two bottles. By the end of the two, I was drinking three bottles of wine before I went on stage. I don't think anybody ever knew I was drunk. I don't think I was drunk. In fact, I know I wasn't drunk, because I can't play when I'm drunk. At the end of the tour, it's like you're being dumped into a desert and you don't remember, you know, where your house is, you know, or what you did with your driver's license, or if you still have a car, or a girlfriend, or a wife, or children. I mean, you're just, you know, lost. It's
closing time. Tired after the tour. Over 100 concerts, then full stop. Nothing felt more important than withdrawing. Leonard Cohen entered a monastery.
I didn't know what else to do. And nothing seemed to be as urgent as studying these matters.
Was ordained a monk and served his Buddhist teacher Roshi, whom he met and became fascinated by nearly 40 years ago.
So I moved up to the mountain and after a while I became ordained as a monk. I mean, you're doing it for a reason. It isn't just, you know, to build up your muscles. It's not just a macho exercise. It's to kind of cook your mind so that you can hear what he's saying, because you can't hear what he's saying if you're all full of yourself. So there you get so tired that you can't pretend. And that's all a monastery is. Is a place where they make you so tired that you give up pretending. You know, I never stayed in show business. You know, I guess I should have. You know, if I had wanted to really establish a certain kind of career, but I didn't have any appetite for that sort of thing. I always wanted to go back to a little room in Montreal, or go back to my house on Idre, or just stay in that corner where you're sitting.
Record releases, tours, then back to a quiet room, back to a small room.
The light came through the window.
Life and it shipwrecks like everybody else's life, and you mess up and it collapses, whether it's with a woman or yourself or your own mind or your confidence or whatever it is, it happens to everybody. So, you know, that happens to you, and then it gets kind of tricky, because sometimes the collapse is so thorough that it it destroys your capacity to work. If you're lucky, you can somehow protect just that tiny little corner of your life from complete destruction. Everybody experiences this because this life is designed to overthrow you. Nobody masters it.
I'll try to say a little more.
I'm very happy when my life is uneventful and I don't have strong feelings about one thing or another.
Didn't used to be like that?
No, it didn't used to be like that. It was very much a sense of struggle and not defeat actually, but weariness of the struggle. After a while, you just get tired of your own of your own drama.
Tired of everything being a struggle, always on the road. What was it like touring when his son and daughter were little?
Go on tours and to be aware of when they were small.
There was no problem. I always knew they were well taken care of. I was always escaping, anyways. You know, I mean, a large part of my life was escaping. Whatever it was, even if the situation looked good, I had to escape because it didn't look good to me. So it was a selfish life, and but it didn't seem so at the time. It just seemed a matter of survival. You know, I guess kids suffered and people close to me suffered because I was always leaving. Not for very long, but you know, I was always trying to get away.
I've been listening to all the dissension. I've been listening to all the pain. And I feel that no matter what I do for you, gonna come back again. But I think that I can heal it. But I think that I can heal it. I'm a fool, but I think that I can heal it with this song.
What makes you really happy today?
Well, I have a little drawing in here. It says, only one thing made him happy. And now that it was gone, everything made him happy. So that's pretty close. I feel tremendously relieved that I'm not worried about my happiness. There are things, of course, that make me happy when I see my children well, when I see my daughter's dogs, a glass of wine. But what I'm so happy about is that the background of discomfort, of distress, has evaporated. It's not that the emotions don't come, it's just that the background is clear. Before, it was all one piece. It was very dark, a sense of things being deeply not right. And, you know, by the grace of God, that feeling has evaporated. So I can feel real sorrow now. It's not just the sorrow that emerges from the sorrow. It's not just the melancholy that emerges from the melancholy. So when things touch me in a sorrowful way, I can
I can speak about them, and more important, I can feel them.
Those years in a monastery on a mountain in California perhaps made things a bit brighter.
That was connected with it, but I don't know what it was. I honestly don't know. The religious life generally is, it generally strengthens the ego and makes people really miserable, because the promise is so cruel. The promise is that you will live a life free from pain. You know, if you get enlightened, you will never suffer again. Well, it's a very cruel promise, because nobody can live without suffering. Doesn't matter how advanced or fulfilled or enlightened an individual is, he'll never be free from the sorrows and pains of the moment. If someone steps on his toe, he's going to cry out. And if someone steps on his heart, he's going to cry out.
Is life easier now than
before? Much easier.
Why is that? Wisdom?
No. The brain cells associated with anxiety begin to die. And you just feel better. It doesn't depend on meditation or whether you brush your teeth in the morning.
There are no waves here, but if you want to, there are. Waves like those that wash onto the beaches at Idra.
Days of kindness. Greece is a good place to look at the moon, isn't it? You can read by moonlight. You can read on the terrace. You can see a face as you saw it when you were young. There was good light then, oil lamps and candles, and those little flames that floated on a cork in olive oil. What I loved in my old life, I haven't forgotten. It lives in my spine. Mariana and the child, the days of kindness. It rises in my spine and it manifests as tears. I pray that a loving memory exists for them too, the precious ones I overthrew for an education in the world.
All right.
Sweet.
Beautiful.
Sweet.
Sweet. Yeah.
There's more.
Something.
Friday night and dinner party.
Oh, man. 1967 coming back on us. Wow.
Old friends are gathered around the dining table in the living room. Cloth napkins on the plates. Silver cutlery. Old-fashioned stem glasses with gold rims.
What a great song. Always been one of my favorites.
No one's ever really
Well, done. Rod Stewart.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Let's play it one more time.
All right.
I'm
yeah.
Know it now.
I see it. I love it. It's incredible. I mean, what a little poem.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cohen brings out his juice harp, and the sound man prepares the guitar.
Doing the juice harp?
Yeah.
I knew it. The juice harp.
It's just singing, man, over and over again.
Yeah.
Why'd
you get the words right?
If I listen long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe it's all true.
What do you want? Where do you find your real pleasure? You know, what kind of table do you have to sit at? Who does your company have to be, you know, to satisfy the criteria that you had when you were young? I mean, does everybody have to be beautiful? Does everybody have to be rich and smart? Do all places have to be, you know, well appointed? You know, does your own life have to be yielding applause and admiration? You know, if you're lucky, the scale gets reduced. You still want those things.
Straight face while I cry.
Cohen goes to the kitchen to do the washing up. At 10 o'clock, he's standing in boxer shorts and sweater, bidding goodnight. The guests continue. dressed his party and next morning.
Solo!
It is morning in a Los Angeles suburb. Leonard Cohen has cleaned up after last night's party. He's sitting in his blue sofa with his legs on the coffee table. On the table lies an outline of the new volume of poetry he is going to publish in the autumn.
What's your favorite?
In the book? There's some nice drawings. I don't know if I have a favorite. What I like about the book is it doesn't try to be important. I think that's what I like about it. It pretends to be modest.
Pretends to?
Yeah, it pretends to be modest. Well, how modest can it be, actually, when, you know, it's going to be published and I'm going to be asking people to pay money for it.
Read me something?
Okay. I'll try to read you something. I can't really find anything that
you like?
Could stand reading. there must be something, huh? Well, let's read a little later.
If it be your will. Leonard Cohen, who doesn't want to remember, plays his old songs.
If it be your will, if there is a choice, let the rivers fill, let the hills rejoice, let your mercy spill on all these burning hearts in hell. If it be your will to make us well. And draw us near. And bind us tight. All your children here. Our rags of light, all dressed to kill, and in the night, if it be your will, if it be your will. I remember that one. Well, they gave me that one song, you know.